The subject for today's talk is health for the whole man. All of us are interested in being healthy, and as a matter of fact, as compared to, let us say, a few years ago, say 30 or 40 years ago, the emphasis on health in all directions has increased. Medical profession has proliferated. There are ads in the newspapers about medicines, about various pathies. There are ads about gymnasiums. Then there are ads about weight reduction, the units where you can go and reduce your weight and so on. So, it is not as if, as a society, we are not health conscious. We are enormously health conscious. We all want to be healthy. However, if we look at the society and the direction in which it is going, very often we find that attention is being focused on certain things, such as, let us say, going to a gymnasium, bodybuilding, losing weight. Sometimes advertisements are given to the effect that eat as much as you like and still stay slim. So the emphasis is on enjoyment and still staying healthy. Very seldom do you find advice given to control yourself in one direction or another. Very seldom there are advertisements about dyspepsia or inability to digest. You are given medicine. You are not told to eat less or to watch what you eat. So what has happened in the modern world is that though there is considerable emphasis on health, it is going in certain directions. We see in the newspapers photographs of young men who have built their muscles and who are displaying their muscles and who have got the first rank. Similarly, we see on the TV and in the newspapers photographs of Miss Femina, Miss India, Miss World, Miss Universe, and one might think that this depends upon how good looking you are. Not in the least, it depends on a host of other things. One of which is physical culture, because every part of the body has to have an exact measurement, and as has been advertised by a cosmetic firm, Body Shop, I think, that nobody fits this bill except about 8 women in 1,000. So what happens is that those who are trying to become beauty queens and so on want to reduce only certain parts of their anatomy to the right proportion. So therefore they have to take those particular exercises, they have to starve themselves, they have to be lean. The bodybuilders have to have big muscles, the beauty queens have to be very thin. So that is what the world is getting into to a greater and greater extent. I was pointing out that 30 or 40 years ago, some of these things didn't exist. There were no beauty competitions. Originally when they started, the student remembers that somebody who was appearing for her, who was doing her medical studies, just as a lark took part in a beauty competition, won it, but she became a doctor. Now what has happened? These beauty competitions have been improved, and everything does not depend only on the beauty and how you walk on the catwalk and so on. You are asked questions and your intelligence is tested. So you are asked questions about what you are going to do if you win this competition and become a beauty queen, Miss Universe. And very often the answer is that they are going to follow in the footsteps of Mother Teresa, and they are going to serve the poor, and they are going to look after the children who are diseased and so on. And after the beauty competition is won, that particular woman is shown sometimes in a photograph with some group of children all distributing sweets to somebody or something of the kind. And if you follow the career of some of these beauty queens later on, where do they end? They end in Hindi films. They end in modeling. and hardly any one of them comes anywhere near following Mother Teresa. So, though of course, there is a great deal of emphasis on health, it is taking very different directions. Fashions have proliferated, and in order to just look like other people and not look too bare or too simple or too sort of flaunting your simplicity, one feels a little compelled to sort of give in to the ways of the world and use ornaments and so on and so forth. But it would be good to remember one Sanskrit saying which said that in fact you don't need all these ornaments. Hastasya bhushanam danam. What is the ornament of the hand? That you give with it. Give freely. Hastasya bhushanam danam satyam kanthasya bhushanam. Speaking the truth is the ornament of your throat. You don't have to put pearls, gold necklaces. That is the ornament. Srotrasya bhushanam shastram. You don't have to wear earrings. You have to listen to scriptures. You have to listen to the shastra. Bhushanai kim prayojanam. Why use gold ornament? But in our young days, at least some of these adages, we used to hear about them. Today children, do they even hear these sentences? No. They go on wanting this, that and the other. So this is what the world is taking in its stride, and everybody is following it. We are glued to the television. We like to see what is happening and so on. And little children, 4-year-old girls say that this is what they want to do. They want to become Miss Universe. So extremely wrong models, extremely wrong ideas are set up before people. And in fact, real health, health for the whole person is not taken into account. Now, this is in a sense a bit frivolous, but this is the state of the world. This is the state of the society around us. And therefore, it being the state of the society around us, we must, if not protect ourselves, which we should, but at least protect the younger ones, the people who have come in contact with us, and keep in mind that these are problems which in a sense the young are facing, which we did not face. We were lucky, we were fortunate in that we did not have to face such problems. But now a 4-year-old faces this as a problem at a very impressionable age. So our children and our grandchildren are going to face very different problems. They are already facing these different problems. And now, coming to the subject proper and going away a little from the state of the world, all of us have been healthy sometimes and we have experienced ill health sometimes. None of us has had continuous good health and no illness ever, and none of us has been ill all the time and no good health at all time. This has been a very good thing. This has been a good thing because it teaches us. We are here to learn. We learn both from the pleasure as from the pain. So we learn both from our good health as well as from our ill health. So we have to be, as it were, grateful when we are healthy, but equally grateful when we are not healthy. Because what happens is that ill health is the outward manifestation of something which has gone wrong inside, or there has been an imbalance and that imbalance has manifested itself outward. Sometimes one is not so fortunate. The imbalance may not present itself outwardly. It may remain suppressed, and then there might be suddenly a blast of that imbalance, instead of which a bit of ill health off and on is something which will tell us a little about how we should conduct ourselves wisely. And now the word health has come to us etymologically in such a manner that there are a whole host of words which are related to it. The word hail, the word whole, the word heal, all these words, and even the word holy, all these words come from the same root. You say, hail fellow well met. So you are wishing him good health. Hail and hearty. Healthy and hearty. So this is the etymology. So health is being whole in the body. It is a body which is not in need of healing. It is a body which is balanced. So this is a state of stable but dynamic equilibrium in all parts of the body and the mind, which is as it were adjusted to the society around to a certain extent and enables one to lead a full life and helps one to fulfill goals which one has set for oneself. So we can say that it is a state of stable but dynamic equilibrium. Why dynamic? Because the body is never static. It is continuously changing. It is changing so continuously that every cell in the body is undergoing a change, and at the end of 7 years, the entire body is renewed, and this is called Nitya Pralaya. This is, as it were, a manifestation of Anitya. So there is a dynamic equilibrium. Though a change is taking place constantly, the form remains stable. So you are stable, in a state of stable health. But change is taking place constantly. Now normally, health is defined as an absence of illness. If there is no illness, then it is considered that you are healthy. Disease is looked upon as the disease of a part of the body. So suppose you have indigestion, it is the disease of a part of the body. Suppose you have typhoid or malaria, it is an infection which is, as it were, come from outside. And now these parts have now, allopathic medicine has separated them. Right? And these parts are studied individually. So what happens is that you go to a doctor, actually a family physician, as an institution seems to have almost disappeared. But if you are lucky enough to have a family physician and you go to that doctor and you say this is what you are suffering from, what will very often happen is that he will say, oh, you are having stomach complaints all the time, then go to the specialist. If you have any kind of complaint, eye complaint, you go to the eye specialist. If you have throat complaint, go to the ENT specialist. So what has happened is that specialization has increased enormously, and you go to the specialist also still doesn't tell you what is wrong with you. He will order a barrage of tests, and you have to undergo, you have to take those tests, and the results of those tests will come, and according to the results of those tests, medicines will be prescribed. Once again, in the present student's childhood, specialization had not proliferated so much. You went to your family physician, you went to the doctor. The doctor treated you and knew you for a number of years, and therefore he knew what your weak spots were, he knew what your predisposition were, he knew what kind of medicine will help you, and very often he used to use his clinical acumen. I think even the word has now disappeared from the dictionary. There is no such thing as clinical acumen. There are tests. And what is the attitude of these specialists? The attitude of these specialists is that if something has gone wrong with an organ, then that organ has to be repaired. it is not to be healed or restored, it has to be repaired. If there is an infection, that infection has to be killed. So it is not as if you are trying to restore the body or heal the body, or you are helping the body to fight the infection. You are doing it all from the outside, just as you repair a tape recorder, you repair the body. And you, as it were, equate the body with a machine. A mechanistic approach has developed. Now this has been the result of, it's unfortunate, but it has been the result of what is known as the Cartesian philosophy. There was a philosopher by name Descartes, and he brought forth this method of splitting everything into small parts and studying those small parts individually, so that instead of taking too wide a view and therefore not locating exactly what has happened, try and focus your attention on the part which has gone wrong. Nothing is wrong in the philosophy as such. The philosophy was not wrong. In fact, in Descartes' own history, one comes across various instances where Descartes did not follow the Cartesian approach. He looked upon the mind and the body as something which affected each other considerably. But what has happened is that now in the modern sciences, all sciences, biological sciences, physical sciences, social sciences, all kinds of study, your approach is to separate everything into small parts, cut everything into small parts, look at that small part, and afterwards not even relate it to the rest of the person. That is where the thing goes wrong. It is true that if something is wrong with the eye, there is no point in viewing the entire person. You will have to look at what is wrong with the eye. But once having located what is wrong with the eye, or what is wrong with the digestive system, or why one person has got asthma, you also have to relate it to the rest of the person and see why this is happening, why this has taken place. Now that is what is missing in the modern times more and more, unfortunately, as a result of the Cartesian philosophy, of which most of the physicians have not even heard. They probably, because philosophy has lost ground. Nowhere is philosophy taught. Nowadays, colleges don't get students for the subject of philosophy. And certainly, doctors are so heavily loaded with their own curriculum that they are studying their course following a particular system. Hardly goes to their ears, if at all once or twice, probably not at all. But they follow this blindly and with great determination and with such force, and think of their methods as so sacrosanct, that other systems of medicine, such as homeopathy, such as Ayurveda, such as Yunani, such as Chinese medicine, which don't quite follow this, are looked down upon and are condemned by them. But as a matter of fact, it is very likely that every system has some truth, and all systems should have an open mind and want to take whatever is valid from each system. So this is not to belittle the allopathic system. The allopathic system has given us diagnostic techniques which are so good. One may say that they order you many tests, but it is true that the diagnostic techniques are so good, so excellent, that it has helped humanity a great deal. And there are doctors and doctors. Not every doctor follows blindly in this Cartesian method. There are doctors who are very humane, who take into account the whole man, who take into account the mindset, who take into account exactly why certain things happen. You get an asthma attack, do you get it when you get tense? Do you get it when you are frightened? Do you get it when, and so on and so forth. It is not that. So this is not against any particular pathy, but the, again, a general trend which is very visible. This general trend, amazingly, has even affected literature. And in literature, new school has come to the forefront, where you deconstruct. The line of a poem, you take one line of a poem and you split it into words, and you wonder why this particular word is used and not another. What is behind using this particular? So instead of trying to understand and appreciate and see the poem as a whole, you chop it up, deconstruct it. So you can carry these things to a very wrong lens, as it were. Another thing which has to be taken into account is that in some of the systems, what is done is that in order to find cures for various diseases, you artificially implant these diseases into animals. And after implanting these diseases into animals, you give them medicines and try to find out, and you think that if something cures an animal, it will cure a human being also. So innumerable animals are sacrificed for the sake of experiment in this system. Vivisection takes place and so on and so forth. So the kind of means which are used in order to come to ends are certainly not the right means, and of course animal protectors are now raising their voice against this. But there was a time when from India plane fulls of monkeys used to be sent abroad. A whole plane which was just filled with monkeys and which went abroad for the purposes of examination. The progress that has taken place also has to be taken into account and has to be accounted for. For instance, plague, to some extent malaria, though it has come back, the tuberculosis, typhoid, cholera, smallpox, quite a number of these diseases which were of the nature of epidemics and used to wipe out large populations seem to have been brought to a certain extent under control, though Fridtjof Capra questions whether medicine has done this or whether hygiene, nutrition, sanitation, such things have been more responsible for curtailing these diseases rather than medicine. Of course, if there is a case, occasionally the medicine cures it. Not that the medicine is not useful, but why these diseases don't proliferate, especially in the advanced countries, is because of much better nutrition, much better hygiene, and much better sanitation. So this is about the physical body. We have taken a long time over the physical body, partly at least because we, no matter how much we don't want to identify with the physical body, if our physical body is not all right, then we are not really able to do much. Though one says that if one is not well, one should be grateful. This is all very good to say, but one hardly ever feels grateful that one is not well. One gets quite upset and bothered. One must not neglect one's body. It is an instrument. Without this instrument kept in good repair, nothing can happen. Certainly spiritual progress cannot take place. It is said, and very rightly said, that shariram adyam khalu dharma sadhanam. Even if you want to progress spiritually, your instrument is the body. So the body you cannot neglect. Nevertheless, the body is transitory, impermanent and illusory. And we have to go beyond the body. We can't confine our attention to the body alone, because the body is not the beginning and the end of everything. We don't believe in that, do we? We don't think like Charvak that we are here and then once we die, there is nothing. We don't think that. We think differently. And we are thinking here about the health of the whole man. So what is the whole man? In our topic today, the emphasis is on the whole man. It is not just on health, right? So, apart from this body with which we are so involved, which is the visible physical, there is the invisible physical. And what is the invisible physical? The invisible physical is prana, astral body and kama. So this is the lower quaternary of which body and the health of the body is taken into account, but the health of this invisible physical even, this is physical, but the health of the invisible physical is not taken into account. Now the principle next to the body, higher than the body as it were, is prana. And in our scriptures, much is given about prana, which is not known to modern medicine and certainly not known to allopathy. Most of us have heard of pancha prana, and these pancha pranas have been mentioned by Shankaracharya. They have been mentioned in many places in his Shatashloki, and they are mentioned as prana, samana, vyana, apana and udana. So these are the five pranas, and these five pranas have different functions to perform. So prana is the normal breath, and not just the breath, but the food or the water we take in, that is also of the nature of life. The food we take in is alive, it's not dead. The water we drink is alive, it's not dead. So all of this is prana. Samana is the vayu or the prana which helps us digest it. Vyana is the vayu which takes after the digestion what has resulted from the digestion, blood and all the other juices, rasas, to the right parts of the body, to the proper organs of the body. Apana is the vayu which discards waste matter. And udana is one prana which is under one's control, and in its normal aspect it allows us to control our muscles and so on. But if developed, this is the prana which can lead you to levitation and to various siddhis and so on. Udana can lead us to that. Not that it is something to be attempted, but just for the sake of information. Then there is the astral body. Prana and the astral body are intertwined. They are not really separate. And we have heard of nadis. Normally speaking, nadis is just this pulse. But we have heard of the nadis which exist in the human body next to our spinal column, Ida, Pingala and Sushumna. And if we activate these, if these are activated, then Kundalini is activated, which is supposed to be a spiritual. And now, these days again, those people who are not absolutely interested in the physical, but are interested in the subtler aspects of the body, go in for these kinds of things. They want to activate the Kundalini. So they try to take up those kinds of disciplines such as pranayama, and if those disciplines are not undertaken under the guidance of a very proper guru, they can lead to a great deal of harm. As a matter of fact, these should not be attempted on a physical level. Pranayama on a physical level is something which should not be attempted, for the simple reason that Patanjali in his Yoga Sutra, when he gives these eight things which are to be practiced by a spiritual aspirant, the eight steps to be practiced by a spiritual aspirant, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So yama niyama come first. You have to practice yama, you have to practice the niyama. And if you are not practicing the yamas and the niyamas, then you should not go to pranayama. And which of us really and truly and completely succeed in practicing yama and niyama? Now we all know what the yamas and the niyamas are. Not killing, yamas are not killing, not stealing, not telling lies, continence and non-covetousness. And the niyamas are purity, contentment, austerity, silent repetition of sacred texts and devotion, shuchi, santosha, tapa, swadhyaya and ishvara pranidhana. So not only should one not focus one's attention too much on the physical body, one should also not focus one's attention too much on the astral and the prana. Not too much. Once again, of course, the prana has to be healthy, normal, good. And all normal adages which are given, such as eat proper food at proper times, not too much, not too little, take regular exercise, no need to take such exercise that your muscles build up to hefty, weighty kind of things, huh? So normal exercise, and keep yourself away from all kinds of addiction. Even when, what happens very often, why do people get addicted? They get addicted, at least some of the people get addicted to drinking or to drug taking and so on, because they are depressed or they are in despair or things of that kind. But even if you are depressed or in despair or in a bad state of mind, suppose there is shit on the road and the road is very hot and you are finding walking on the road very hot while the shit will be cool, will you put your foot into it? Now, if you will not do that, why should you go when you are upset, depressed and so on, and try out things which are known to be harmful, which are known to be addictive, which are known, actually putting your foot into the shit is not going to do you much harm. You can go home and wash it. But once you get addicted, and in the case of drug taking, there have been instances of your getting addicted by having taken it once or twice. So how dangerous it is. So simple adages should be kept in mind for good health. We can look at this whole thing about the human body, the visible and the invisible, from the point of view of what it is made of. It is made of pancha mahabhutas. So it is made of earth, water, fire, air and ether or akasha. And now these five bhutas, each one of them has, as it were, given us one sense. We have five senses, but each one of these, the body is made up from these five mahabhutas, but each one of them has given us a sense each. So from the earth comes the sense of smell, from water comes the sense of taste, from fire comes sight, from air comes touch, and from akasha, from ether, comes hearing, because akasha is shabda. So these are the pancha mahabhutas of which our body is made up. Where did we get them, these pancha mahabhutas? Where did we get them from? They are all over and we have borrowed them. Not only did we borrow them in order to be born, every day we are taking these panchamahabhutas in and we are throwing them out. So every day we are using them. So if we are using them, and most of them, let us hope, even water, there is no saying what will happen, but let us hope that even water will be free. We are using them free of charge. We are not paying for it. Nevertheless, we owe an enormous gratitude to nature for lending us these mahabhutas so that we can have a proper goal. What is important is, why have we taken this birth? Why are we here? We require good health in order to pursue a certain goal which we have set ourselves. But what goal are we going to set ourselves? What is the proper goal? The mahabhutas are given to us in order not to follow any old goal which we like. They are not given to us in order that we just go and make more and more and more and more money. These are very precious things in nature, and they are lent to us. We are not the owners, we are the borrowers of the pancha mahabhutas, and at our death we have to return all these mahabhutas back to the mahabhutas in nature. So we have borrowed them. So if we have borrowed them, we have to use them with discrimination. We have to use them with some kind of forethought. And now, we also know
that we are conversant with the physical senses. But we have been told again and again that the physical senses are only the outward instruments, but in fact in the astral body, the astral senses exist. So these panchamahabhutas, to us they look as if they are physical, touchable, easily sort of, you know, but in fact there are subtler aspects to the mahabhutas, and these subtler aspects of the mahabhutas give us the astral senses. It is through the astral senses that we actually are able to see, hear, taste, touch and so on. So we have to keep the health of the astral body and the prana in mind, and in order to keep the astral and the prana healthy, we have to really focus our attention on kama, because kama is the last invisible physical. Now what has happened in the case of kama is that part of our manas has got itself entangled with this kama. We have not been really able to keep them separate. We have tried to take advantage of the kama with the help of our mind, and we have, that is how we have found number of ways, a very large number of ways of enjoying ourselves. In the animal world you do not find so many ways of enjoying themselves, is it not? It is the ingenuity of the human mind which through the association of the kama and manas has led to the proliferation of this philosophy of enjoyment. And therefore what we have to do is that we have to control our kama or kama manas. And now there is the normal dichotomy of body and mind. This dichotomy of body and mind has been carried so far that if a patient is mentally ill, he goes to a psychiatrist and the psychiatrist thinks that something is wrong with his brain and he gives him chemicals to put right the brain. You follow? So even for mental illnesses, instead of using mental technique, chemicals are used, which is very sad, because the chemicals actually do not cure the person. It merely suppresses the symptoms. And if the symptoms are suppressed for a long enough time, it is hoped that they will disappear. In some cases they may, but in many cases they will come back again. Never mind. Now, there is this dichotomy between the body and the mind. But what is the bridge between them? Very often we speak of body, speech and mind. So the speech is also very important, and we can pay a little attention to what we have to do in respect of speech. The health of our speech. What should we do to keep our speech healthy? And in Living the Life, in one article, B.P. Wadia has talked about the vow of silence, and there he says that these kinds of speech, some kinds of speech must be avoided. Injurious speech, useless speech, they must be avoided at all costs. Also, right at the beginning of your study, when you have not really acquainted yourself with the subject, asking too many questions for the sake of just asking questions or putting yourself forward is not considered right. Ahankaric speech, trying to say, I did this, I did that, etc., must be avoided at all costs. One should not talk about the faults of either oneself or others, because by talking about the faults of oneself, one lends them strength. By talking about the faults of others, you are committing even a more difficult fault. Then it is important even to speak the truth. This one sees often. But I told him the truth. But it is important to tell the truth at the proper time, at a proper place, to a proper person. You are not always called upon to shout the truth from the rooftop. Keep that truth to yourself unless it is necessary for you, for in some capacity or another, because of some responsibility or so on and so forth, that you do divulge something which need not be divulged. So even the truth should be spoken at the proper time, at a proper place, and to the proper person. And in addition, we are told about speech that periodic silence should be observed. Periodic silence, and those who have observed periodic silence will have found that a great upsurge of energy takes place if silence is observed. We spend quite a lot of our energy in talking, so that energy is conserved. And now in various ways and methods this subject can be looked upon. For instance, in the secret doctrine and in the oriental philosophy, we are told about the upadhis. And this body is there described as annamaya kosha. The prana in the astral body is the pranamaya kosha. The conjunction of the kama and the manas is the manomaya kosha. The conjunction of manas, the higher manas rather, is vijnanamaya kosha, and buddhi is the anandamaya kosha. Now, what makes us think that we must have a healthy body, which is the annamaya kosha, but we can ignore all the other koshas? After all, what are the koshas? All the koshas are the instruments of the spirit. It is true that we have to keep all the instruments in good order. We have to keep our fountain pen in good order. The ink has to be right. The nib has to be right. The hand which writes is an instrument of the body. But this body itself is an instrument. So we have to keep this instrument parampara, as it were, in mind. So each one of these things is an instrument. The annamaya kosha is an instrument, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, anandamaya kosha. All these are the instruments of the spirit, and we have to keep all these instruments in the proper order. Mind. A great deal can be said about the mind, but perhaps a few things can be said, such as next Sunday our subject is ambition, and again in living the life various things are said about ambition, and this world is governed by ambition. Does any doctor ever ask anybody or ever try to gauge whether anybody is ambitious? Does anybody in this world ever think that something is wrong with being ambitious? Ambition is looked upon as a good thing, right? But in theosophy we are told that ambition is the first curse. You must work as if you are ambitious, but you must not in fact be ambitious for anything, right? So there is the ambition for money, there is the ambition for fame, there is the ambition for power, and if we have been sort of studying theosophy for some time and so on, we might think that we are not really ambitious. We don't want money, we don't want fame, we don't want power, so we seem to be free, or at least this wise. Not so. We are told that the theosophical student aspirant is bound to develop ambition in proportion to his own earnestness. We are told that the theosophical student aspirant is bound to develop ambition in proportion to his own earnestness. The more a neophyte resolves and attempts, the more subtle is the way in which the force of ambition invades him. It is important to remember that ambition is not gross, it is not only material. It can assume subtler and subtler forms, and those subtler forms you may not be able to perceive. Ambition can creep in as well as it can soar. So this is something to be kept in mind when we think in terms of the mind. How to keep your mind healthy? In this world, competition is encouraged. You must stand first, you must come in the first 10, so on and so forth. Compete, all the time competition. Ambition, that is considered a virtue, and we are going against that and saying that this is something to be avoided. Luckily, at least, anger, envy, depression, despair are not considered desirable. But of course, we all know that these are things which do assail our mind, and we have to combat them. We have to be, therefore, as vigilant as we possibly can be. And we can only be vigilant if we keep our mind active and if we keep our smriti alive. Vigilance is not committing a mistake, continuously being aware. So you have to develop your awareness, and the more your awareness develops, the more chance there is of your noticing what is happening within you. Time is already up. So if there are any questions. This student is not a homeopath, so I doubt that the student will be able to answer the question satisfactorily. But broadly speaking, what has happened is that in allopathy, what was thought was that there is something, the opposite of that should be used to kill it, to control it. And now the homeopathic adage is like cures like, or something of that kind. But we have a homeopath here.